Thank you very much for the invitation and Elodie for all of the organizational aspects. I'm excited to present the project. It's actually not what I'm working on currently, but it's something I've developed with Louis Calais over the last year or 2 years. So I'll give it a test. So thanks very much for the invitation. It's provided me with an excellent opportunity to present this research project on the history of Hegel's political thought in the Weimar Republic and the philosophy of constitutional law that often still takes place in the shadow of Weimar. Thus, while this conference marks the 200th anniversary of Hegel's Rex philosophy, my presentation touches on the Renaissance in idealism in the interwar period in Germany, which coincided with the centenary of the publication of Hegel's textbook. My focus here is on the intensification of the crisis in Weimar state law doctrine in the 1920s and the role Hegel's political thinking had to play in that context. In this presentation, I will touch on two trajectories. On the one hand, I pursue a line of inquiry that at first glance appears to be of largely historical or analytical interest. And on the other, I examine the significance of Hegel's idealism and the idea of a constitution for the philosophy of constitutional law. As I will detail today, these two trajectories are indissolubly linked. The crisis in Weimar state law doctrine was partly methodological, and the introduction of Hegel's political thought played a role in the development of a form of constitutional theory that moved outside of the conventional or positive legal sphere, separating the constitution from constitutional law. This innovation, tied to the Renaissance in idealism in Weimar, remains a fulcrum point in discussions on the philosophy of constitutional law today. Before continuing, it's apt to first define these trajectories in more detail. The first trajectory is what may be called a reception history of Hegel's political thought in Weimar. The question of whether we can really define the use of Hegel's ideas in the turbulent interwar period in terms of direct reception has been highlighted in a nuanced way in the critical literature. The very term neo-Hegelian was originally pejorative and took its cue from an epoch that it ideologically established neo-Kantianism as the reigning orthodoxy. In any case, it is important to keep in mind that a reception history is also always a history of transformation and adaptation, if not primarily so. Hegel's thought in the Weimar context is perhaps best characterized by the catchphrase objective idealism. I will go into this in more detail below. For the time being, what is central to note is how this coinage successfully simplified the image of Hegel's absolute idealism, initially obscuring its subjective dimension in the process and its relation to Kantianism. At the level of constitutional doctrine, objective idealism, one of the worldviews of Willem Dilthey, identified with Hegelian and Spinozistic metaphysics, was deployed in opposition to liberal democratic ideas, such as individualism and equality before the law, or was used against the fledgling liberal constitutional state. The attraction of Hegel's dialectic in the Weimar context was its capacity for synthesis, the overcoming of contradiction, which for state law teachers could be viewed as emphasizing the return to cohesive objective institutions or an ethical component national state that stood above the dissensions of party interests or political pluralism. Already by the end of the First World War, as we will see below, Hegel had become part of the daily repertoire of war propaganda. His use in nationalist and conservative circles in this early period most likely determined his later appropriation in arguments against the Weimar state constitution. For the later history of Hegel's scholarship, this will prove determinative. The fact that Hegel's thought was so politically charged in the Weimar Republic makes it difficult to approach in an objective manner. In a context of increasing polemic over the constitution, Hegel was interpreted as a thinker of realpolitik who glorified the power state above the rule of law and civil society. Writings that appeared after the Second World War often blamed Hegel for providing the bases for modern totalitarianism. Undoubtedly, the tone set by such books was in harmony with the fact that the renewed crisis in Hegel's political thought coincided with the constitutional crisis in Weimar and later with the rise of National Socialism. That being said, such condemnation obscured the fact that the limits of Hegel's applicability to fascism had eventually been recognized by the scholarship produced in Hitler's Germany. Nevertheless, Hegel's reception in Weimar needs to be approached both directly and critically, giving due respect to the importance of historical context and the nuances this may involve at the level of philosophical interpretation. One of the central difficulties here is that when we approach the use of Hegel's thought in Weimar, we are already conscious of the later history of National Socialism. This tends to determine our image of the period. The second trajectory is what may be called the actuality of Hegel's idea of the constitution, or the role of his thinking can still play in methodological debates in the philosophy of constitutional law. My aim here is to shed light on issues that remain central in contemporary constitutional theory and to see how Hegel's political thought may provide us with insights into this subject. How does Hegel think through the concepts of order, law, institution, and constitution, for example? By studying the little explored reception history of Hegel's thought during the political crisis of the First Republic, a central philosophical tension in modern constitutional doctrine can be exposed. The idea of a constitution as a regulative, normative, political, and legal order that is, however, grounded in a decision or agency supposedly external to that order. What this highlights is how the ontological status of political authority and its relation to law is a core problem of constitutionalism. What Hegel represents here is a thinker able to transcend the limits of constitutional law. Arguably, this too was central to his attraction during the crisis of state law doctrine in Weimar. Here I thus investigate whether Hegel's constitutional thought can be interpreted as possibly overcoming or resolving the tension between the ontological status of political authority and its relation to law. Now, I don't go so far in this direction in the paper. I mean, obviously it's a research project. So that will come hopefully later. To explain laws and norms, a founding event, a regulative order or existential agency is often posited. By contrast, Hegel's constitutional thought embeds the notion of constituent power in a broader historical continuum. This may provide recent critical scholarship with a unique way of understanding how constitutions are neither a mere creature of law nor of sovereign decision. Thus, I will explore whether Hegel's thinking permits a unique interrogation of the foundations of constitutional law and provides the essential ingredients of what has been termed the material constitution. A rather different Hegel is revealed in the philosophical analysis of his idea of the constitution. A Hegel equally important for theorists who emphasize the political dimension to instituting law, and positivists who focus on the established legal order. Moreover, as has been recognized in recent constitutional theory, this essential distinction, so important to the debates in Weimar, can be increasingly blurred. So I'm going to go into two sections here, one on Eric Kaufmann and the other on Hermann Heller, and one on Hegel is quite short and doesn't really touch on this second trajectory so much. That's more or less kind of an open research question. But what I'm interested in doing is dividing the reception history in some way from Hegel's constitutional thinking or political ideas. So with these two interrelated trajectories of my project outlined, I will now begin. The first section here considers the Hegelianism of Eric Kaufmann, which bridged his belligerent nationalism of the First World War to embolden a thoroughgoing attack on neo-Kantianism in the Weimar Republic. The second section focuses on Hermann Heller and the aspects of his own state doctrine that do not escape the influence of Hegel's political thought and connect him to Kaufmann. The last section discusses perennial aspects of Hegel's idealism and the idea of the constitution that remains central to modern theorizing in the philosophy of constitutional law. So, first section, the Hegelian critique of neo-Kantianism in its context, Eric Kaufmann. Eric Kaufmann, a constitutional jurist and international law scholar, was central to the introduction of historical and sociological methods into state law scholarship. His early renown came from his committed Protestant conservative Hegelianism and belligerent nationalism that glorified the German state. This also included an anti-positivistic mixing of social Darwinism and Nietzschean ideas. As a student, he attended the lectures of Diltai and Georg Simmel in Berlin. From Diltai, he most likely took the notion of objective idealism, which answered his hunger for a worldview, as Hermann Heller put it, in the nationalist epoch in the run-up to the First World War. The major influence on his legal thought, however, was Otto von Guericke and the promoter of his postdoctoral dissertation, Albert Hainel. Guericke and Hainel pointed the way for Kaufmann through the sensitive combination of law with history. Such approaches were integrated into Kaufmann's own interpretation of Hegel. Hence, his Hegelianism was eclectic in character. That being said, as Heller suggested of his contemporary, Kaufmann, and I quote, connection with Hegel is expressed in the constant contact of his scientific work with this philosophy, end quote. For Heller, Kaufmann was, and I quote again, the only publicist that goes back directly to Hegel for his concept of organism and sensed the power idea that predominates in Hegel's organic view of the state, end quote. That being said, Kaufmann's Hegelianism, as I will argue here, evolved in an important respect in the thinking from the Second Empire into the Weimar Republic. And it's interesting to note that Heller, in his study on Hegel and the power state, only touches on Kaufmann's early works, only cites from the early works, pre-war, and he doesn't cite his most well-known book on the critique of neo-Kantianism. Strange. Okay. Prior to the First World War, Kaufmann had been appealing to Hegel to construct a theory of the state and its place in international law. From this perspective, world history was entirely determinative, and the assertion of the power of a state was its emergence as a historical actor. And I quote from Kaufmann here, political self-assertion is self-assertion for the purpose of participating in the cultural assets of humankind, participating in world history, end quote. These lines are generally representative of the driving forces at the core of Kaufmann's first wave Hegelianism. This saw Hegel appear alongside Leopold von Ranke and Otto von Bismarck, which was later to become a central theme of the interwar Hegel reception and its liberal critique. For Kaufmann, the state is the organization, a people, or I quote, sorry, the state is an organization, a people gives itself to weave itself into world history and assert its particularity, end quote. Hence, the themes that will become so central to the later anti-positivist approaches in the Weimar Republic are already observable here. The will of the people, their constitution, is separated from constitutional law. In other words, a given positive legal system is a mere consequence of the emergence of the state as a primary, a historical actor that was the direct object of the will of the people that gave shape to it. In his growing nationalism that aimed at, and quoting here from Michael Scholeis, the Hegelian self-realization of the state, Kaufmann, the jurist, joined what Heller called the modern philosophers of war, which led him to a monistic doctrine of political power. And I quote from Kaufmann here. In the struggles for political and economic power, no less than in art, philosophy, and religion, something spiritual is revealed. a certain kind of feeling of life struggles for expression and reality, that a certain belief and a certain passion had to work in the people struggling for power and life, which gave them the desire to fight against others and assert themselves. So everything I've quoted from Kaufman thus far is from his early period, prior to the First World War. So it's his Habilitation and a lecture he gave on the state organism, I believe. And now I'll turn to the post-war period, the post-First World War, not the second. Obviously, the humiliating defeat of Germany in the First World War and the subsequent Treaty of Versailles, with its sweeping war reparations and the economic consequences that ensued, forced Kaufmann to rethink his triumphant objective idealism. Just like many other German intellectuals of the period, he thus underwent an inward migration in order to come to terms with what had happened. In his early work, as we have seen, he had blended the Hegelian idea of world history with a form of power positivism that emphasized the ethical unity of the victorious national state, the existential conflict in the self-assertion of a people in the objective spirit at war. After the defeat, a significant change in Kaufmann's Hegelianism occurred, or at least that is what I'm going to argue here. In the first place, Kaufmann had to take into account the judgment of world history that it condemned Germany to suffer defeat in the war. This led to a more nuanced historical argument that became methodological in orientation. Kaufmann now sought the logic behind Germany's subjugation in the legacy of positive law and the triumph of neo-Kantianism, the decline of German idealism, or the lack of a genuine legal philosophy. So his Hegelianism, his idealism became strictly methodological. And the reason why Germany suffered defeat was precisely because it didn't have, it had no legal philosophy anymore. So here Kaufmann was a forerunner of what has been termed the idealistic tendency in constitutional theory, which set out from an attack on positivist and neo-Kantian approaches to state law doctrine. As Kaufmann put it in 1921, and I quote, "After its tremendous achievements in speculation, the German spirit seems philosophically exhausted," end quote. And as he continued, I'm quoting here from his critique of neo-Kantianism in legal philosophy, and as he continued, and I quote, "The distinct legal philosophy is in a particular critical situation, which is closely connected with the crisis in which our philosophy in general, indeed our whole spiritual life, is. After the slow ebb of the great speculative flood of German idealism, we had no legal philosophy at all for a long time," end quote. With this, we can see how Kaufmann shifted his emphasis. The Hegelian thesis on world history and its judgment now turned against German legal thought, culture, and the national state. More precisely, Kaufmann mobilized idealism in a wide-ranging historical argument to undermine the legitimacy of the positive state law legislation taken over from the Wilhelmine imperial era into the fledgling republic. This involved a methodological interrogation of the limits of constitutional and international law. No doubt this was politically motivated. For example, the fact that this occurred under the Weimar Republic and only retrospectively against the Second Empire may tell us much about Kaufmann's conservatism. Perhaps, however, from another angle, it only became possible to draw such historical insight after the defeat of Germany in the war. Only then could the danger of positive state law doctrine and the neo-Kantian methodology be seen for what they were. Similar arguments, tellingly, were to recur after the defeat of National Socialism, insofar as positive legal ideology supposedly upheld its regime. Even though it was thoroughly anti-positivistic, it would be incorrect to see Kaufmann's legal philosophy in direct opposition to positive law. Rather, he sought out the foundations that only became visible at the borders of a given legal order. To this end, he held up his objective idealism alongside the Aristotelian Christian tradition of natural law. From his perspective, it was the positivist and neo-Kantian methodologies that threatened to relativize constitutional law. Moreover, he astutely distinguished Kant from neo-Kantianism. The latter involved a demystification and abstract formalization of Kant's thinking. Through this process, as Kaufmann argued, contemporary philosophy in general has dissolved into an epistemology that, as he put it, and I quote, had murdered the soul of Kantian speculation, end quote. To this, he added the elements of Hegel's legal philosophy that overcame Kant's metaphysical doctrine of the will in the duality of morality and legality. As Kaufmann had observed, however, this connected itself to traditions that extended into the speculative period of idealism in its, and I quote, reduction of all legal relationships to the will. And here I quote from Kaufmann in his critique of neo-Kantianism. This was part of Kantian legal theory. This was meant by Kant as an objective order of intelligible wills, but in Hegelian legal philosophy, it was reinterpreted as a part of mere abstract law, as Kantian morality was reinterpreted to be the antithesis of the merely subjective, ultimately resulting in a probabilistic morality, both of which would be sublated in the synthesis of objective spirit, in which the absolute spirit reveals itself sociologically and historically to a certain extent, end quote. Perhaps with this quotation, we can observe best the change in Kaufmann's legal theory after the First World War and during the Weimar Republic. For him, Hegel's political thought was neither about solidifying the philosophical foundations of the state, nor was it a nationalist mythology any longer. By contrast, Hegel bolstered the idealistic tendency in state law theory and took part in the elaboration of a novel methodology. In this respect, Hegel's legal philosophy could be harnessed to overcome the one-sided neo-Kantian approaches and the strict rule of positive law or the abstract generality of a technical legal formalism. Obviously, with the reference to absolute spirit, Kaufmann saw in Hegel a way to observe the dynamic of states from the elevated vantage point of world history and to understand the sociological forces that determined them. And this was his argument. Essentially, he made this argument of why Germany had lost the war was precisely because of its, yeah, well, I said that already about the philosophy, but also due to its sociological makeup. With this, Kaufmann paved the way for a peculiar reception of Hegel in Weimar state law doctrine. A range of other scholars, all anti-positivist in orientation, cited Kaufmann's critique of neo-Kantianism approvingly. As he further developed his ideas in the early 1930s, the measured and scholarly character of his position emerges with greater clarity. Limitations are set on objective spirit, and the higher realm of absolute spirit in religion, art, and philosophy is given its due. Thus, distinctive boundaries are placed on the state here. Its power is irrevocably constrained. The Marktstaat is no longer the aspiration of Kaufmann's legal philosophy, as it had been in the pre-war period. This leads to a focus on the international legal dimension. And Kaufmann, after the Second World War, returned to Germany, and yeah, he was most famous for being in international law and treating the occupation. War is transient and aimed at peace. It is not waged against internal institutions, family, or private individuals. Kaufmann's interpretation of Hegel's thought here ought to be placed in its context, the death throes of the Weimar Republic. This is to be balanced by the legacy Kaufmann correctly recognized in Hegel's Rechtsphilosophie. Hegel, and I quote, gave the state, without making it absolute, a spiritual and ethical foundation that is separated by a world from all individualist or social deductions of utility, end quote. Suffice to say, the warmongering nationalist Hegel, bedfellow of Bismarck, is set aside here for a more realistic vision of politics that takes into account when the limits of the positive legal order are breached, whether that be in constitutional law or the international reciprocity between nations. Roughly put, Hegel provided Kaufmann with the objective side of his idealist approach, along with the classical doctrines of Christian natural law and Aristotle. With the ascendance of National Socialism, Kaufmann lost his position at the University of Berlin and was forced into exile because of his Jewish ancestry. In this, Carl Schmitt would prove instrumental. He wrote letters to get Kaufmann out of the university. So now onto Hermann Heller, Power and the Doctrine of the State. If Hermann Heller belongs beside Erich Kaufmann, this is certainly not due to his political orientation. Heller was, along with Hans Kelsen, a lonely social democrat and defender of the Weimar Reichstadt. He belongs with Kaufmann, rather, because of a comparative methodological approach to state law doctrine, which is similarly mobilized in a wide-ranging anti-positivism that seeks after the foundations of the state. Moreover, in Heller's attacks on neo-Kantianism, a similar pathological opposition to the state law doctrine of Kelsen can be observed. And of course, yeah, I didn't mention Kelsen at all under Kaufmann, but that's the major polemic. I won't have time to give just due justice to Kelsen here in this passage or in the text, but that will be part of the project. As he put it, and I quote, if German state law theorists are almost unanimous in rejecting Kelsen's own method and its results, they are certainly right to do so, end quote. At another level, in Heller's Hegel and der nationale Marktstaatsgedanke in Deutschland, the debt to the early wave of Kaufmann's objective idealism is explicit. This is evidenced by the critical references to Kaufmann's early work at the conclusion of Heller's study. Despite all intentions to the contrary, however, Heller's state law doctrine is also rooted in Hegel's Rechtsphilosophie. He recognized, as he put it in his posthumous Staatslehre, that, and I quote, all the most important impulses for state law doctrine are today emanating from Hegel and his method, end quote. Such important impulses are none other than the idealistic tendency in Weimar state law doctrine and the dialectical method in which the unity of the composite state could be achieved. As Heller stated, and I quote, in a way that also clarifies my work, Kaufmann explains the concept of the individual on which he, with Hegel, bases his explanations and which he sharply delimits from natural law and the Augustinian concepts of the individual, end quote. The individual, read here through the lens of Kaufmann's early Hegelianism, is to be absorbed by the political whole. Obviously, such an ideological interpretation of Hegel's legal philosophy has little to do with it and must be subjected to critical scrutiny. Yet the critique of Hegel that Heller presents is not so clear-cut. The question that remains is the extent to which this clarifies Heller's own work, as he himself mentions. On the one hand, Heller's reference is to the individual as conceived by natural law, which he sought to rehabilitate for the Weimar state constitution. On the other, this brought him to the idea of the collective will as a form of legitimacy for all positive norms. In Heller's book, Sovereignty, all of this emerges much more clearly, as does its relation to Hegel's legal thought. Here, Heller recognized that Hegel continued the project of natural jurisprudence, which was his own aim in the attempt to socially radicalize and thus legitimize the Weimar state constitution. And I quote from Heller, the people as a unity of will, an acceptable sovereign person. So that was the basis, according to him, of natural jurisprudence's justification of the constitutional state, which also continued down into Hegel's thinking. Thus, Heller sees two sees in Hegel the continuance of the substantive idea that legal individualism can only be grasped in relation to a greater constitutional whole. To this end, Heller attacks the bourgeois political thought that emerged after the 1848 revolution, which, in a quote, believed neither in a binding political task nor in itself. The argument is very comparable to Kaufmann. Kaufmann just projects it at the legal philosophy and the lack of a legal philosophy. So for Heller, bourgeois legal philosophy was empty and it thoroughly relativized, and I quote, the substantive ideas of freedom and equality, end quote, to be found in the natural law tradition. It only sought to preserve the security of bourgeois property and, I quote once again from sovereignty, to provide a bulwark against the onslaught of proletarian demands, end quote. In contrast to bourgeois legal philosophy, Heller's aim was to rehabilitate the Rechtsstaat by giving it a substantive and material content so that the individual can exist in a reciprocal relation to the constitutional whole. This is what he sought to rescue from constitutional positivism and Kelsen's pure theory of law. The problem with the formal constitutional state and the pure theory of law for Heller was that it was defenseless against Carl Schmitt's recourse to the purely arbitrary nature of decision and power as the constituting order. As Heller saw it, the argument for the substantive constitutional state was contingent on presenting law and politics in an interdependent or dialectical relation that was motivated by a social dynamic that in the end involved a highly democratic political theory. Thus, even if Kelsen's formalism ended in a normative nothingness for Heller, the legal constitutional state was not to be discarded. Thus, Heller directed his efforts to a form of legal, economic, and social homogeny. Only this would realize, in a concrete sense, the freedom of rights bearing, the freedom of a rights-bearing subject that, as a universal, took part in the collective will of the state. In this way, for Heller, legal formalism and constitutional positivism must be transformed into the social legal state, which was a synonym for the democratic constitutional state or social democracy. Consequently, Heller offered a third alternative situated between Kelsen and Schmitt, the archetypal thinkers of the normative and decisionist conceptions of the Constitution. Perhaps it would be going too far to relate Heller's ideas here to Hegel, to Hegel's legal thought and constitutional thought. That being said, Hegel's notion that political constitutions, and I quote from Hegel, it's an addition, Hothos, to the Rex philosophy. Hegel's notion that, and I quote, political constitutions are one-sided if they cannot sustain themselves within themselves the principle of free subjectivity, end quote, is not far from Heller's perspective. This free subjectivity is what Hegel had in mind at the outset of his 1821 textbook, where the individual will is universalized in taking itself as an object that is actively posited in the sphere of abstract law. This represents the beginnings of the universal will in which all individuality and particularity have been sublated within legal personhood. While it is true that Hegel limited the Rechtsstaat to, and I quote, the external state, the state of necessity and the understanding, end quote, or in logical terms to the stage of difference, his grasp of the sphere of public constitutional law necessarily integrated the freedom of modern civil society, which of course is not just economics, but abstract law, private law, in essence. So now to my last section, which is barely a section, but more conclusion. So on Hegel's idea of constitution. That Hegel took aim at Kantian legal formalism would have won him favor with the anti-positivists in the Weimar Republic. because he presupposed the existence of a constitution or political unity prior to its legal composition, or rejected the view that saw it as something strictly made in section 273 of his Rechtsphilosophie, he could arguably be used as leverage against the positivist approach to the Weimar state constitution, as well as neo-Kantian thought. To this can be added the sweeping scope of Hegel's doctrine of the constitution, which encompassed both private and public or political law, not to mention the international reciprocity between nations. Hegel's understanding of a constitution, as rooted in historical, political, cultural, and philosophical concerns, situated him perfectly as a counter-reference to the positive state law doctrine that had governed legal thought in Germany since 1848. The latter was intensified by neo-Kantianism and its purely scientific understanding of the Constitution that focused strictly on the letter of the law and excluded any extra legal elements as inessential to its search for constitutional objectivity. By contrast, Hegel's legal philosophy contains a doctrine of the Constitution that is neither purely legal nor simply political. A constitution entails a political existence, but this in no way implies its primacy over the unity of legal order, both of which are materialized or constituted in the institutions of the state. Moreover, Kelsen's positivism finds its place within the universe of Hegel's pantheism, where, and I quote from Hegel, law is in general positive through its form of having validity within a state. And this legal authority is the principle which underlies knowledge of law, i.e. the positive science of law, end quote. Rather than considering the structural problem of the creation of law to be an abstraction from a concrete positive legal and political order, Hegel thus developed a distinctive public law doctrine that also encompassed constitutional positivism in a material constitution composed of institutions, customs, and laws. In the recognition that this moved outside the conventional juridical sphere, Hegel rightly called this, and I quote, the philosophical science of law, end quote, that had as its, and I quote again, subject matter, the idea of law, the conception of law, and its actualization, end quote. So that's from the beginning, I think, section one, yeah, of the Rechtsphilosophie. With this, Hegel continued the earlier speculative productions of universal public law in Germany and Kantian legal thought. The elaboration of this philosophical science, as he terms it, was essential to any discussion of constitutional foundations, as well as to the positive production of law. Law, in all its forms, was the true doctrine of the state constitution that, considered philosophically, had surpassed religion to become the system of the ethical world. And that is my paper. I could have touched on, another dimension to explore would have actually been, instead of the Rechtsphilosophie, would have been to explore the Verfassungsschrift, because that is one of the primary texts that's received by the anti-positivists. Kaufmann praises it, Schmidt praises it, and Heller is highly critical of it. But I thought, well, the conference is about the Rechtsphilosophie. So.
Thank you very much.